UK, the prison population has soared to nearly 83,000, its highest ever recorded level. And this upward trend shows no sign of stopping. Experts say the system is stretched to breaking point with chronic overcrowding and a sharp increase in prison suicide levels. In the words of Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, the Archbishop of Westminster, prisoners are the most marginalised and forgotten people in our society. And the problems prisoners face behind bars don't end when they are released back into society. Every day, hundreds of inmates walk out of prisons in the UK with no home, no job, and no one to support them. As a result, it's distressing but hardly surprising to learn that two-thirds of former prisoners get sucked back into the world of crime. So why has there been such a dramatic increase in the number of prisoners in Britain? And what are conditions like inside the nation's jails? Well, to gain an insight, I spoke to Andy Key Downs, Director of the Prison Advice and Care Trust, a Catholic charity that provides support and help to prisoners and their families.
There are lots of reasons for the big increase in the prison population. One of them is that sentences, the judges and magistrates, have become tougher. We've also seen a greater use of what are called indeterminate sentences, which are sentences which effectively say you will stay in prison until we decide you're safe to be released. We've seen a massive increase in drugs, and drugs fuel such a massive proportion of crime, about 80% of crime, some people think. And there are some very real problems. I think we have become more punitive as a society. I think also we've seen a failure of mental health and other services in the community. Our prisons do have a lot of people in them who are mentally ill, who I believe, and many others believe, would be better cared for in therapeutic communities, in healthcare-based communities.
Another distressing reality is that two-thirds of all these prisoners reoffend within 2 years of release. Is that a figure that has remained more or less steady?
The reoffending rate, as it's called, has remained more or less steady. The government are pointing at some modest improvements in those figures, but they're pretty much steady.
Why is it so difficult for prisoners to go on the straight and narrow? What's preventing these reoffending figures from coming down?
There are a whole range of reasons why people don't carry on reoffending when they come out of prison. One is housing. One is family. One is employment. If they've got a drugs problem, that can make it almost impossible for them to cope on the outside. But if a prisoner comes out of prison with £50 in their pocket and no family to return to and nowhere to call home and no job, then, of course, the likelihood of them reoffending is extremely high. And shockingly, that is still the case for a great many prisoners leaving prison. Prison governors and the prisons in Britain do work very, very hard to provide what support they can to resettle prisoners. But the funding isn't there. The government doesn't provide anything like the level of funding or support for prisoners to resettle on release from prison.
Turning now to conditions inside, we talked about the record high number of prisoners crammed into these jails. What are conditions like for some of these inmates? Can you describe perhaps some of the most shocking or worrying conditions that you have seen?
The overcrowding of prisons is causing some really shocking problems. We're seeing Victorian jails with cells that were built to house a single prisoner, a solitary prisoner, being used for two men, or sometimes jails using prison cells for three people. We're seeing an increase again of the suicide rate amongst prisoners, particularly those prisoners when they're first received into prison. One of the things that shocks me most of all, though, perhaps, is that so many prisoners, particularly men in prison, find themselves locked up in their cells for 23 hours a day. And that can't be any way to treat a human being, and it can't be any way to help somebody rehabilitate. I think one of the most crushing things in prison is the sheer boredom of men lying on their bunks all day long, day after day. There really isn't anything like the level of support they need in terms of training and education and work inside prisons. And I think that's something that can really crush people's morale.
You talked about, in fact, the high rate of suicides. What kind of figures are we talking about here?
Well, we see a suicide rate of about 90 people per year in prisons, and that may not seem very particularly high when you look at the size of the population. But what you have to bear in mind is that that is the tip of the iceberg. It's estimated that out of every suicide, there are at least two or possibly three attempted suicides where prison officers are regularly cutting men down who are trying to hang themselves from the bars of their cells or from any point that they can find to attach a rope to. Self-harm is also very prevalent, particularly in the women's prisons, women cutting themselves, hurting themselves in all sorts of ways. So the suicide rate is really it's really the tip of the iceberg. The level of self-harm and self-mutilation is very shocking, and it's almost become a sort of normal feature of life. It's not unusual to be in a prison and to hear that somebody's swallowed a razor blade or somebody's, you know, being cut down. It's really quite common.
And in this situation, how important is the figure of a chaplain?
Chaplains are vital, absolutely vital. I think particularly for Catholics, whether from England or from Ireland or from overseas, and of course we're seeing far more prisoners now coming from Africa and Eastern Europe. For them, the presence of a Catholic chaplain can make them feel that the church is there for them. You know, in their darkest hour, the church is still there, offering care and support and God's love, and it can make all the difference in the world. The chaplains save people's lives and they save people's spirits. One of the things that we do is work in a number of prisons on a prisoner's first night in custody, which is the most dangerous time. If they're going to hurt themselves, the most dangerous time is their first night, the shock of coming in. And the shock of losing their family or fearing the loss of their family is the thing that can tip many people over the edge. So we have a scheme where we simply talk to people and we listen to them. And we also look into whether their children are being properly cared for. You know, there are about 170,000 children each year in Britain who experience the imprisonment of a parent, but there's no formal support network, there's no statutory support network for them whatsoever. So that's another group of people who suffer a sentence, innocent people who suffer a sentence who we need to care for and look after.
You said that drugs are fueling a high proportion of crimes nowadays. I mean, how many, what percentage of prisoners are given help or therapy to try to kick their dependence on drugs or alcohol?
The drug programs, the drug work in prisons has got much better, and to be fair, the mental health services have got better in recent years. In some prisons, it's relatively good. I know in some women's prisons, I know of some people who will sentence women to prison knowing that they have a better chance of getting drug treatment in a prison than they would in the community. Now, that doesn't mean that treatment is available to all and is everything that it should be. What it says is how appalling it is in the community. But in many other prisons, the prevalence of drugs in prison, illegal drugs within prison, unfortunately, that does offset a lot of the efforts to detox prisoners once they're inside. Prisons are working very, very hard on this, but if you can imagine trying to run proper health care and detox programs in an overcrowded Victorian inner city jail, it's incredibly difficult. Many of the prisons we have are not fit for purpose anymore. They need to be pulled down and they need to be broken up into smaller community-based units where people can get the kind of treatment that they need, because we spend a fortune on incarcerating people, and as you say, two-thirds of them, sometimes as high as 90% with young offenders, will come out and will be reconvicted within 2 years. So as well as the moral and ethical argument, there's a sheer financial argument for doing this better.
You obviously have dealt with prisoners or met prisoners and helped them and their families. Is there any one particular case or one particular anecdote, be it of the prisoner or the prisoner's family, that really, in your opinion, sums up the scale of the problem or their desperate plight?
Gosh, there are so many. One that comes to mind, which is quite recent, is of a woman I met who came to us after her son was sent to prison on remand for attacking his own father. He hurt his own father very badly. Her son was on crack cocaine, had trained as a teacher, had difficulties in his personal life and got into drugs. And on one occasion he attacked his father, who was an alcoholic. So there was a lot of problems within this family. He was sent away to prison. She then tried to find him but couldn't find him because the prison she thought he'd been sent to was full He was then transferred to another prison and then on to another prison, and she couldn't track him down. And because there wasn't the kind of service that was needed there on his first night in custody, and because he didn't ring home, he thought his family would abandon him immediately. So he didn't ring home, and she spent a month trying to find him. Meanwhile, he was on what's called suicide watch in the prison. The officers were watching him 24/7 through his cell to make sure that he was not attempting to kill himself. When she did eventually manage to track him down to the prison, it took her 5 days to get through the telephone system, which was engaged permanently, until she found him. She was then able to tell him that she forgave him and that she loved him, and he was then taken off suicide watch. 3 months later, his case went to court, and it was dismissed, and he was released. Now, for me, that's one example of what we do to vulnerable people. It's also an example of what we do to families.
Time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much.
I was speaking there to Andy Keane Downs, Director of the Prison Advice and Care Trust.